Good morning. It is 9:58 a.m. We are here today, July 9th, 2019, in the OPA hearing room, Suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagatnya, Guam, for the motion hearing of OPAPA 19-006, Flame Tree Freedom Center, Inc. versus the Guam Housing and Urban Renewal Authority. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J. F. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jarek Hernandez and Clarissa Roque. Will appellant Flame Tree please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Eddie Regis, President of Flame Tree Freedom Center, will be representing Flame Tree.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency Gura please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Tony Perez, legal counsel Gura, present with Albert Santos, A&E manager, and Greta Bonneville, buyer supervisor one.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Yeah. Morning, sir. This is a pretty straightforward appeal. Flame Tree lodged this appeal because they believe that Gura utilized the wrong method of source selection in procuring these services. Specifically, Flame Tree wanted Gura to use 5GCA 5217, which is procurement from non-profit corporations, whereas Gura used 5211, an invitation for bid. They argue in their appeal, and it's quoted verbatim both in my motion and my reply, and I'll summarize quickly. They argue the procurement process was flawed from the beginning when Gura made this a competitive process rather than utilizing the procurement methodology provided in 5217, 5210, and 5001D. They had a problem since the start of this procurement. This procurement started on February 20, 2019, which is the date that the invitation for a bid was issued. It's also the date that Mr. Regis, on behalf of Flame Tree, picked up that invitation for bid. The invitation for bid on its face is clear, that's an IFB, and it also states that it's a competitive process and it's going to be awarded to the lowest responsible and responsive bidder. That's also in line with what the definition of an IFB is pursuant to 5GCA 5211. They picked up the packet. They knew it was an IFB. They knew it was a competitive process. As they said in their appeal, it was flawed. They knew it was flawed, but they didn't protest within 14 days, which is what the law requires. A little while later, approximately 2 to 3 weeks on March 18th, Mr. Regis sends a follow-up email. Hey, can you guys, March 18th email, attaching a March 11th letter, and basically, I call it the March 11th formal interest email letter. Gura doesn't respond. March 27th does a follow-up. Hey, can you reply to my March 18th email attaching my March 11th letter? March 28th, Ms. Greta Balmio reiterates, and it's actually redundant and obvious, reiterates, this is being bid through the competitive process. He receives that. Mr. Regis then submits his bid. Turns out, in this competitive process, Mr. Regis' company won base bid 3, and they were awarded that. They were not awarded base bid 1. There is no confusion at all for the appellant as to when they knew that a Gura was issuing an IFB. Because again, their main contention is Gura should not have done an IFB. They should have done 5217 procurement from nonprofit. Gura did not do a procurement from nonprofit, and that's been made clear from the beginning. And he knew that in the beginning. He should have appealed the method of source selection within 14 days of knowing that Gura was utilizing an IFB. May 7th, some 2 months, 7 days after the IFB was picked up, he issues a letter of protest as to the award. It's not really about the award in his letter of protest, because he's using the award. I mean, it's about the award. It wasn't about necessarily the method of source selection. If it was about the method of source selection in the protest, he would have done what he did in the appeal, saying, I'm protesting the method of source selection. He didn't do that. He protested the award. And you could tell in his protest letter that it wasn't about the method of source selection because he won base bid 3. And since he won base bid 3 under the competitive process, it's clear that he was protesting the award and not the process in place. Well, Gura denied it, denied the protest. He filed his appeal. This appeal solely relates to the method of source selection. a methodology he was aware of on February 28th and didn't protest within 14 days. In such a circumstance, the OPA is without jurisdiction to deal with this matter, and this matter should be dismissed. He raises a couple, I guess I call them tertiary issues, which aren't really relevant. One of them being that he wasn't sure how GURA was going to evaluate the proposals. The IFB is clear how proposals were to be evaluated, how bids were to be evaluated. He makes issue that, well, I didn't hear directly from the executive director about my question or my letter or my email. The IFB is clear that all questions regarding the procurement be sent to Greta and Albert. And when he sent those, they responded. Greta responded to him. But this appeal is entirely without merit. He waited too long. He obviously waited too long, and it should be dismissed. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Regis.
Thank you, sir. Foremost, I would like to just say that it's hard for a company to anticipate whether or not a company, the government of Guam is going to issue an IFB or an RFP or whatever the case might be. It was issued on, as Attorney Parrish said, on the, I guess, the 28th of February. Okay. That time, you know, I didn't know at that time if I was going to even submit for any interest on that. And I didn't submit any interest on that until about 10 days later. Okay. Now, let me just jump to the point. There is 5001 Delta, 5GCA 5001 Delta, that it specifically states that it's a policy that the government shall award to a nonprofit organization that employs individuals with disabilities, provided that they can perform the service within the time specified. Mm-hmm. We've done that with GURA the two prior years. We're actually contracted by GURA to do it using the same process as I have consistently mentioned in my documentation. But during the bid opening on the 28th of March, it was opened in front of all the vendors and GURA staff, and at no point in time was there any indication that anyone was non-responsive to the bid. Okay, so on 5217, and I didn't submit a bid bond because I applied 5217. Okay, 5217 clearly states that if this is for procurement from nonprofits, a contract may be awarded for supply or service without competition when a contractor is a nonprofit corporation employing sheltered or handicapped workers. As a condition of the award, the contractor must certify that labor on the project will be performed by handicapped persons, except that supervisory personnel do not have to be handicapped. The third sentence is a contract awarded pursuant to this section shall not be required to post any bond required under Article 5 of this chapter. So under 5217, I didn't submit a bond. They accepted it. They accepted the fact that I did not submit a bond. I was not informed that I was non-responsive. So I didn't know how GURA was going to respond to my correspondence, especially my correspondence in April after the bid opening. Will I specify specific issues with respect to the bid process and how I was treated before by GURA, how I was treated by GSA, and so forth. But the fact that they didn't declare me non-responsive here on 5217 clearly indicates that maybe 5217 is applicable. I don't know what their determination is going to be. I didn't know their determination until after they issued the contract award intentions with respect to the bid. That's the only time I knew. They're reviewing their proposals. They're reviewing the other proposals from the bidders. I don't know if they're compliant or not. I don't know if I'm compliant. But it's clear they didn't I didn't receive any letter that I was non-compliant or non-responsive to the bid. You know, had they stated that I was non, I should have submitted a bid bond, but I didn't. I applied this, and it says a contractor should, awarded a contract pursuant to this section shall not. Okay, so the section is it may be awarded on a non-competitive basis, it may not be awarded on a non-competitive basis, and the condition of the award after certified. Well, in my formal interests on 11 March letter, I indicated that I certified. Now, if they wanted more information on the certification of personnel, I could have provided that, but they didn't. So, I contend that I was not in a position to protest because I didn't know what the potential, how they were going to treat 5217 or 5001 Delta. And I don't, there's two separate provisions. 5001 Delta says the government shall, it's a policy. 5217 is further on and talks about contract formation. But to me, the policy overrides, so I didn't know how Bureau was actually going to implement this provision of the law, whether or not 5217 was applicable or not. I provided all the information indicating that we're a nonprofit. We provided, in my opinion, excellent service to Bureau for the past 2 years. We even did our best to get them through federal inspection by HUD when they came out here. And as far as I know, we went over and above, and at the request of Bureau, we actually did extra work in order to prepare for that inspection. So, you know, the one thing I do take exception to in Bureau's response to my opposition to dismiss is that I've been disingenuous about this whole thing, as if I'm creating a facade or I'm dishonest in my presentation of the materials. My only motivation is trying to keep individuals within disabilities employed and using the provision of the law is dictated in the 5GCA. That's all I'm trying to do here. But I don't think I was disingenuous. I think I'm trying to follow the spirit and intent of the law. And there's about eight provisions that standard for determining the lowest responsible bidder that they have to make. One includes price. I agree I was overpriced compared to the other bidder, but is the competitor bidder Get LLC, are they a responsible bidder? I didn't know that. And is their price a reasonable price? I don't know that. I could tell you one thing, that I was in another situation with another agency. The lowest price was $2,500 a month, and there were five other bidders, and the rest of them were over $10,000. Okay, and I can tell you that one agency didn't go for the $2,500 because even though it was the lowest price, I don't think the lowest price is just the determining factor as it's stated in the IFB. So I just submit that the fact that Bureau did not declare me non-responsive for not submitting a bid bond based on this provision of 5217. I just assumed that I didn't know what direction they would go. They didn't respond to my April letter to the director. I didn't get a response. The only response I got was after they awarded the next time I got a response was when they awarded the or announced the contract award. So I submit that I don't think I was in a position to protest until I got that award letter, because I didn't know which way they were going. No one was responding to me. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. The legal standard is when an aggrieved bidder knew or should have known of the facts giving rise to the potential protest. As is clear, it's the method of source selection. He stated it in his own words. I didn't mean to say he's being disingenuous, but he's mischaracterizing the record and his own words and what he stated. He knew, he says, I couldn't anticipate whether GIRO was going to do an IFB, nonprofit procurement, RFP. You don't need to anticipate it. February 28th, you picked it up. It says invitation for bid. It doesn't say procurement for nonprofit. The record is black and white. There's no gray area. He knew it then. Mm-hmm. He knew it was an IFB. So then March 18th, he submits a letter with attachments with his nonprofit status, articles of incorporation, business license, and a letter of formal interest. GIRO again tells him, March 28th, via email, we're bidding this through a competitive process. He still didn't protest. Where's the confusion? How could he not know that GIRO was bidding this through the competitive process when he picked up the IFB, which is clear, and then Greta had to reiterate to him of that fact? Then after the bids are open and abstract of bids is issued, he sends an April 9th letter, wanting GIRO to respond to it. The bids were already open. What do you want GIRO to respond to? There's nothing to respond to you about. IFB evaluation factors are clear. Lowest responsible bidder. The bids were opened. GIRO doesn't need to respond to you. And what's interesting in that April 9th letter, he asked GIRO if he can submit an updated proposal, which was like way out there. I mean, you can't submit an updated price quote or an updated proposal once the bids are opened. That's a clear breach of all procurement policies, and it doesn't breed competition in the procurement process. So he did submit a bid, and I don't know if what he failed to mention is that his bid was like 40% higher than the successful bidder. The successful bidder Get LLC was somewhere around 70, 71, 72, 73,000. His bid was over $30,000 higher. So still, it's his position that even though his bid is so much higher that they should get it. I mean, and this is just a side issue, but I'm just addressing it because he brought it up. His bid was unreasonably high in any event, even if this, in any event, he's not getting this contract in any way because his bid was unreasonably high. But I mean, it's simple. I don't know if Your Honor would like to do a discourse back and forth with the appellant, but ask him, did you receive the IFB? Did you read it?
I do have a few questions, but I would let you finish your response.
Didn't the IFB tell you it was a competitive process? And now in your appeal, the whole basis of your appeal is based upon the method of source selection, which was identified and made known to him on September 28th. He should have appealed it. He should have protested it once he received the IFB, knowing it was a competitive process, if he thought it was flawed from the beginning, like he stated. And his protest should have said, we protest your method of source selection. This should have been done through through 5217 procurement from a nonprofit. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Your Honor, can I just say one thing before?
Go ahead.
So when Greta sent me a response on the 28th of March, I believe it was, she cited 2 CFR 200, or 200 CFR 2, or one of the two, which is the Code of Federal Regulations, okay? In my 9 April letter, I don't know why they cited the 2 CFR. The only reason why I think so is because it's federally funded. I assume that's what it is. But in my 9 April letter, I also cited the Code of Federal Regulations, or actually U.S. Code, that talks about procurement for nonprofits that employ individuals with disabilities. And on that 9 April letter, I never received a response as to whether or not that was taken into consideration as well. So, I'm trying to clarify what the position is of the department and how they're going to respond, because why? In the prior administration, Flame Tree was treated different, and it was done the way I stated in the 9 April letter. And this administration, different leadership, maybe a different lawyer at the time, has a different recourse as far as, I'm not sure if Attorney Paris was the GIRO attorney during the time when we had the contracts prior to this particular bid. So I'm just trying to flesh out and trying to give Gura the benefit of the doubt on how they're going to proceed before I can even, I don't know what they're going to do. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Actually, I'm glad that this is one of the cases that I could take, and I wasn't asked to be accused from it, because I just finished the procurement module. And in that, we discussed this issue of the 5217 and the policy to employ handicapped individuals and that whole. But I always wondered how that would work. And so the question that I have for both of you, because Mr. Ages, you have several other contracts. I know Gura is not your only one that you're contracting with. You have many contracts with the government. And Gura, has any government agency ever just announced the 5217 bid?
If a government agency does elect to utilize the 5217 methodology, you just make them aware that there's an availability for a contract, and if we're going to utilize 5217, nonprofits can avail themselves of applying for it if they're eligible, and provide the eligibility.
But it starts out as an IFB.
Yes.
Was that your experience?
It doesn't start. It doesn't have to start off in an IFB. An IFB is done pursuant to 5GCA 5217.
I understand.
That's a competitive process. If you're going to start off, if you want to use 5217, then you could just make it known to entities such as Flametree, such as Able Industries, people who have done these sort of services before,
but,
and say, hey.
But does the government just announce a 5217 bid, or does it announce some kind of competitive bid, and then isn't it the process where the nonprofit comes in and says, I'm going to bid, and because of my qualification as a 5217 or 5001 Delta, this whole process should take that into account and change and recognize me as a 5217 and award me under the policy of 5001 D. That's the way that I thought that it would run, that it would have to be. You just don't go out and announce a 5217 bid. It's a regular invitation of some sort. I know that Flametree has contracts with OTEC, doesn't it?
Yes.
And that would have, think you would have very technical knowledge, but you're able to show that your utilization of individuals with disabilities is the way that you should be given that contract, in spite of how it would have probably been announced out there for some kind of real technical response or bidder to come in. But you're able to satisfy it and prove that with the supervisor's ability to be able to manage the individuals with the disabilities, that you're going to be able to be a responsible bidder and be able to fulfill that obligation that's in the bid.
So to answer your question, I haven't I haven't seen a proposal issued under 5217 from an agency. My experience has been either an RFP or an IFB is issued, and then in every case that I've gotten a contract, I've cited those provisions as my eligibility to try and apply those.
And so when you submitted your documentation on the 11th of March, and your follow-up letter on the 18th of March, and your follow-up letter to the follow-up letter on the 27th, you were then invoking your 5217 standing and the policy of 5001D, and you would have known that they were not going to honor it, or they should have honored it, and shouldn't the protest have come after the 11th or at least the 18th or after the 27th, because then you knew that they weren't honoring the policy of 5001D. They weren't honoring the provision of 5217, and that was the dates. Those were the dates that you knew or should have known that they were not complying, or they were not complying with the policy of 5001 Delta.
Your Honor is referencing the March 28th email from Greta to Mr. Regis saying, you know, this is going to be procured through the competitive process.
I understand. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
You should have known or should have known that they weren't going to give you the waiver pursuant to 5217 or the exemption, whatever it's called, the 5217 break or the follow the policy, and shouldn't the appeal have been filed 14 days from one of those dates?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know. I have to leave this to you to decide as far as I've already stated my position on when I thought it was, but the fact is that when they cited the Code of Federal Regulations, I don't know why they cited that. Maybe we can ask them why.
But even the CFR that they cited was the CFR that allows for it, doesn't it?
No, they cited the competitive and financial procurement for federal funded contracts.
But,
and then in return, I said, well, yeah, you're citing that CFR, but there's another CFR, 41 U.S.C. Chapter 85, that talks about the same provision here that says that the government, the U.S. government, shall contract using federal funds with nonprofits that employ individuals with disabilities. So they never responded to that letter. So did they weigh 41 U.S. Code Chapter 85 with the two CFR and figure out maybe from their grantor, HUD, to determine how they're going to move with this?
But then shouldn't that have been the date that you, 14 days from that date, a few days after they had not responded, shouldn't that have been the date that you filed your appeal because of the fact that at that point you knew that they were not complying with 5001 Delta, 5217, and not complying with the CFR provision that you cited to them?
Well, I would say that I was not yet in a position to know what position they were going to take, because at the bid opening, Mr. Santos indicated that the recommendation would be forwarded to the commission, the executive commission, to eventually determine the final determination of it. And what I found surprising was I saw the memo from the director to the executive commission, and when I listened to the tape of the meeting, I was very disappointed to indicate that there was no information provided to the board to indicate that there's this potential issue with a nonprofit organization invoking the mandate. The commission in the end would make a decision based on the recommendation from the executive director. It's hard for me to determine which way they were going to go on it. So, you know, I don't have information. I'm not privy to information as to whether or not Yet LLC was compliant in their submission, other than that they were the lowest price bidder. I don't know Getty LLC, you know?
But regardless of Getty LLC or the others, mm-hmm. My understanding of the policy is that once you're able to show that you are a corporation that employs persons with disabilities, that you have individuals who need not be disabled, but who are competent supervisors who can assure that the individuals with disabilities will be able to provide the services that are requested in the, whatever the IFB, RFP, whatever, whatever the need was, that you would be able to meet that need, that under the policy of 5001 Delta, that they were required to stop all the processes. At least that was the understanding that I had of the policy in 5217, was that once you did that, you short-circuited. In the same way that, because of my age, I can go to the front of the line at Rev and Tax. I don't, that there are privileges to my seniority that has me moved to the top, or there are points that should be added to veterans and other things. It's that once you knew that they weren't going to stop, that they were going to continue this ball rolling, that you had to, that you could have or should have known that they weren't going to do a 5217 in compliance with 5001 Delta, you should have filed your protest within 14 days of one of those dates.
Well, I'd have to respectfully disagree, because on the 28th of March was the last time I heard anything from Gura. I didn't know the fact that I wrote the director, didn't get a response. Everyone got a copy of my 9 April letter. I don't know how they're going to respond. I don't know what they're going to take into consideration. So, I'm just going to have to leave it to you as to whether or not you're going to move to dismiss. And I'm okay with that decision if you decide that decision. I respect Gura's position. I wish they had handled it differently. I have several contracts with different government agencies. And in some cases, I go through the same difficulty that I'm going through right now. Unfortunately, in the other cases, my protests haven't gone through and I've decided not to appeal it. But in other cases, it works. What I don't understand, this is one government. I'm glad that the agencies are going through procurement training, because I think this needs to be clarified. I've met with the district director and I said, please look into the two provisions. I think it's too brief. If you look at the Oregon state law and you look at the U.S. code, it's very comprehensive, and I think it takes a lot of the guessing out of the situation. If you decide to move to dismiss, I'm okay with it. And if it was because I misstepped on the procedure, then so be it. That's the way it falls out.
It really pains me to do this, because the work that is being requested in this is work that I believe and I know that your employees, who are unfortunately suffering from disability, could and would be able to fulfill perfectly, as is evident by the fact that you did receive one of the bids. But I think really, because Gura has moved to dismiss, that, and especially that it's a jurisdictional question, that there really is no leeway for me, in spite of my personal feelings, of being able to say this should have been saved for individuals with disabilities, that this is in a major construction where you're building a 30-story high rise. This is doing maintenance, and you could have, and it's not even using those lifters to have the ones down at that they have the fight over at GVB over Tumon to take down big trees. This would be simple and would be perfect for your clientele, and you know where my heart is in that respect. But unfortunately, it is a jurisdictional question. And in spite of what I would like to have done to have saved it, I can't, because it is a jurisdictional issue that's been raised. And I think maybe this may be the teachable moment for all of us, that henceforth, when you make your bids, and since nobody does it, I can't imagine anybody announcing a 5217 bid. That's why that was my first question. Mm-hmm. That when they do issue whatever kinds of bids or RFPs, that immediately, if they that you not only you but whoever else is able to take advantage of 5217 should come in and make clear to the procurement team that's doing this that stop all the processes. I'm a responsible 5217 corporation and bidder, and everything should stop, and this should be awarded to my corporation pursuant to 5201D, and that's it. Just short circuit the whole thing. I think, when we issued this opinion decision, trying to make it clear to everybody out there that it is a policy in the very first section of the procurement code, 5001D, that it shall, and it's mandatory, that it shall go to. But it's all, the jurisdiction is also, if the OPA doesn't have jurisdiction, it shall not hear the case. So there are two mandatory provisions, but the way to be able to protect your corporation and others is to make sure that once you notice or you know that there's a competitive bid and you submit your documents proving that you are a viable and responsible 5217 corporation, everything stops and the bid goes to you. And they don't need to open any bids, they don't need to have anybody submit their bids because a 5217 corporation has to, I hate the word, but trumped everything and stopped the process.
Okay. If I could just bring up a couple points, I do thank you for the decision that you're going to make. Just hypothetically, if GURA did do the 5217 process, it's not a mandatory award. The price still has to be reasonable.
105.
His bid was unreasonably high, way above budget, and
he would have had to stop and looked at his bid. You would have opened it.
We did realize what his bid was on March 28th when they did the bid opening. But
before that, if he on the 11th, you would have had to have opened his bid to determine the price.
We didn't award based it too because it was squared by something.
Yeah, I mean, what Mr. Sanchez has just reminded me of, we didn't award base bid too because it was unreasonably high. If we did do the 5217 process, hypothetically, and did open his base bid one, which was turned out over 30,000 higher than the successful bidder, he wouldn't have been awarded it anyways. Because he cited himself how GSA does it. If you're within budget, you know, for a qualifying nonprofit employing disabled or sheltered individuals, but if you're bid outside the budget, they don't award it to them. And so hypothetically, even if we did do 5217, his bid was way out there. He wasn't getting
it. It would still have been somebody would have looked at it.
I mean, you look at it, and we reject it.
Yeah.
It's too high.
But we just can't outrightly just give him a contract.
You just don't get whatever he wants.
No, I understand, because then you would have to ask them for their cost and prove it. Go through that whole costing process that the procurement statute.
And one other important thing, and Mr. Ridges is right, the statutes are very short. You have these blurbs, two blurbs within the, you know, thick 5GCA Chapter 5, which reference these nonprofits, not procurements from nonprofit, but one of our arguments is, and it'll come for another day, but it's going to come to you, sir. He didn't certify that all his workers are handicapped or disabled. So, I mean, our argument, if this did get to the merits hearing, is he doesn't even qualify for that nonprofit because he failed on his certification. But that's just something to think about, because I know an issue is going to come to the head. This issue is going to come back to you on a 5217 appeal, I think, for your clarification.
Yeah. I would just to disagree with that last assessment.
Okay.
You know,
no, I mean...
Yeah, yeah. And the reason why, Your Honor, is because the certification process. I did certify. That's some of the industries, but it clearly states that not everybody has to do have a disability. And the thing with the cost, what I would submit is, yes, we were overpriced compared to the lowest bidder. In GSA's case, I'll just tell you how GSA has implemented in the past. If my bid was over the budget amount, they would come back to me and say, can you give me another price, a lower price, best and final offer? And I've done that on a couple occasions and was able to eventually get it that way. If you look at the Oregon state law, it says that it shall go to nonprofits that employ individuals at the budgeted amount, meaning that if they budget $100,000 for something, then it's $100,000 even though they're looking for the lowest price bid. I think in this case, your motivation, of course, was lowest price, and I can respect that. But they had the opportunity to issue 5217 because we had been doing the project for them for the past couple of years, and in good faith. And I can tell you one thing: we did an outstanding job. And you know, my regret is that we're not getting the contract. So my staff that were full-time with the GURA projects are now part-time, and we're, just trying to get them work.
But the bid for two is still it will be
base bid two will be addressed, and just to note, they were awarded base bid three.
Yeah. No, I understand.
Yeah, base bid two, we're going to determine what's going to happen with it.
Yeah, but somebody's going to have to do that, so
someone's
going
to
back out. So hopefully the process will know what's going on.
Sure. Going forward.
But more importantly, the thing that I'm going to implore both of you to do is the governor has finally implemented a policy council. And so I'm going to ask both of you, both Gura, Mr. Santos, and Mr. Regis both, to both appear before the policy council or make an appointment with members of the policy council to explain to them some of the things that need to be done. Bring them copies of the Oregon statute about how it should be. This is the way that you think that it would make it easier and clearer. They could, whatever, make it clear that it should be within the budgeted amount and cost and whatever. But just get this clear with them, because I was procurement chair 10 years ago, and I tried to make some changes, and it just kept, every bill was either passed and vetoed, but we've not been able to get an amendment to the procurement statute.
Right.
I'm hoping that now with the governor's office fully going forward with the policy council, that both of you appear before the council and give them your thoughts on how this can be cleared up and what would be the best way to be able to do this.
Right.
And especially to fulfill their policy of 5001G.
Right. And can I just say three real quick things? We agree with you about revisions to the procurement code. I think it should be done in a piecemeal way, because you could have this 90% awesome revision and it'll get rejected or voted down by the legislature based upon the 10%. Second, just for information, he did submit a revised bid. His revised bid was still $15,000 higher than the still $15,000 higher than the successful bidders. So I mean, it would be moot either way. But, yeah, actually, those are my only 2 points.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you both. And just so it's clear, the OPA has no jurisdiction because of the not meeting 14 days from known or should have known. Thank you.
We're off the record at 10:42 a.m.